Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. I am Jeff O'Neill.
And I am Rebecca Shinsky.
We're coming to you. Today is Thursday, February 15th, 2024. I am a little hoarse still, maybe you can hear, post-COVID. We've got a lot of news to talk about, some follow-up about coincidences, how bad Argyle was, adaptation news, Spotify's audiobook sales, some book banning stuff, and maybe some front list. Foy, Rebecca, how are you? Feels like it's been a while since we've recorded.
It has. I mean, it's been a couple weeks. Yeah.
A couple of weeks, I guess. Yeah.
Down and out. I have a pile of things for front list foyer, so I would like to make a point to get there.
I can preview mine for you right now. I read nary a word. Nothing.
I read nothing
last week.
If you had, it seems like folks have like one of two kinds of COVID, and one is the flavor where you just read a ton of like comfort things, and one is the flavor where you don't read at all. You maybe just like watch some crap on TV. So it's sounding like
I watched 23 movies over the last week.
Wow.
So I got caught up on a lot of movies. I was downstairs in the basement isolating like a good little soldier. I was pretty sick. I mean, you know,
you sounded pretty bad last week.
To my knowledge, have not had COVID before. And so I'd always been kind of waiting, but I'd expected to have more of a cold-like, and I had more of a flu-like, but I'm fortunate. I have all 70 of my vaccine boosters at this point, so I can only imagine if I had raw-dogged COVID, what my reaction would have been.
I don't think you want to do that, no.
No, no one wants to do that, but thank you for covering for me. Thank you for the well wishes when I do appreciate people.
What were your movie
wondering
highlights?
I'll save that for foyer, so I'm not
entertainment
the ventriloquist dummy. Yeah,
entertainment
corner, our media diet. When we get started, let's see, coming up on the Patreon next, we're doing our mailbag plus recommendation requests. So we're going to record that right after this, and we'll go up for Patreons shortly thereafter. There will be a preview in the regular feed if you're interested in that. Go read us on Today in Books, Rebecca's Better Living Through Books. First edition is coming back. I am delayed. I have one in the can to release next week, and then have some guests and stuff coming up. I had to delay some things. I was very excited to some interviews. I was very excited to record last week. I'll say no more because otherwise you jinx them actually getting rescheduled. But going to get back in the groove. I think probably two episodes a month for a while for first edition.
Great.
Really excited to see. So stick around for that. It is not going Patreon only. It is coming back. I have been sick and other things have been happening, but we'll get into a regular groove there.
And while we're self-promoting, go ahead and subscribe to the Book Riot Podcast newsletter. It's brpod.substack.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. We're having a good time over there. Every couple weeks, one of us sends out a newsletter. It has links to the recent episodes. It also has insidery stuff. This time around, I tossed out a recommendation request from a Patreon member that I didn't have a good answer to. I had exhausted my resources. Folks shared some ideas in the comments, did a little preview of some of my front list foyer there because I needed to talk to somebody else who's read the same book I've read.
Right.
We're having a good time. The comments are turned on for everybody because we trust the podcast listeners to behave themselves. So,
and probably the single best of the moment pun I have made in Slack. Rebecca captured input in there.
Really incredible stuff. I did go back and check the timestamp, and there is not even a minute between when I say the thing that I say and when you deliver, at least in your top five puns of our now 13-year-long acquaintance.
So. There wasn't a lot of leftover opportunity cost for the punning situation, even 17 seconds later. Let me just read I'll use this as a review. One of the comments on the newsletter was, "This email is a goddamn delight." So I don't know what else to say. Go check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes there where you can subscribe, keep up, and we'll play with it as we go. But so
far, we're having fun.
So good. All right, let's do a sponsor break and then get into some other stuff.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on The Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate, high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, I did save a couple of listener emails for the show. I'm trying to figure out what the right use of these things is. So the kinds of emails that have been going into the newsletter so far is like maybe not as discussion worthy. Not discussion worthy, but like not a lot for us to say, kind of information sharing, examples, you know, kind of weird stuff. But we did ask about coincidences the last time we recorded. You were, I think it was in relation to Martyr. Is that right?
Do you remember? Yes, yes, we were talking about that.
Mm-hmm. And we kind of wondered and aloud about why some coincidences feel like authorial interventions and some of them don't. Why we bump on some of them and some of them we do not. So got a couple of emails, both of them citing experts of some kind. I don't have affirmative consent, so I won't use names.
Okay.
But the your discussion reminded me of something that I once read in Robert McKee's nonfiction book Story. He wrote that a guideline for writing screenplays is that coincidence is acceptable as a major driver of the plot if it occurs in the first third of the movie.
Oh, yet, interesting.
If it occurs in the later two-thirds of a movie and some substantially impacts the plot, audiences will find that unacceptable.
Okay.
So, no, it does. This is also very, thank you, writer, for writing this. I really appreciate that. This is interesting. So, no suggestion of why this might be. I think my smell test here enjoys this kind of distinction.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. I'm thinking about, like, in Martyr, it happens late in the book. The coincidence is kind of the thing that ties everything together. And I've gotten some messages from other folks who were either like, yes, I had the same feeling about the coincidence, or it bothered me, but not enough to like take me off the book because the writing was so good. And like, I get
no deductions. Yeah, what they're saying.
I get that. But there are, you know, like coincidences drive rom-coms and they happen usually at the beginning. Absolutely. And it's like, oh, you just bumped into each other, or you just happen to both be at this person's wedding or the same event. And, you know, all those kinds of like, it must be fate. And when it's the inciting incident, I do have a lot more time for it, for like, okay, that's how it's starting, but then the rest of the plot is going to move organically or naturally, or, you know, unfold without a lot of what feels like that authorial intervention of like, hey, look over here, isn't this a nice trick? So that's interesting. What's the other one? Did somebody else?
So that's one. Yes, okay. I have got another one for you. And this is also, what a name drop here. I remember talking to my mentor Richard Ford. So this is an author. Again, what
well flex. Done.
Incredible stuff here, really. And Ford said the writer's task is to be so good the reader is completely absorbed in the narrative to the point that the coincidence is fully believed. Mm. He said having the narrative acknowledge the coincidence's unlikely nature helps assuage doubts by the reader. It shows that the narrator is aware of the unlikeliness, which helps the events feel more believable.
Smart. That makes sense.
Thought that tidbit of advice would be easy to share.
Yeah.
So I think what we've got here is an emerging theory of the swallowability of coincidences. Mm-hmm. I don't think any one of these things is determinative, but let's say, for example, that you have a coincidence in the last third of a book that is unacknowledged and you do not handle it well. You're going to be more likely to bump on a coincidence happens early in the book that maybe the coincidence is acknowledged both intratextually and metatextually by the narrator, the characters. And it is sort of somewhat more seamless. Now, what does it mean to handle a coincidence well? I don't have any idea what that might mean. How do you frame it? How
know it when you see it.
Because not all everything is a coincidence. I mean, I don't want to get college like we're high talking to each other on Friday night. But like everything is, right? There's a really good This American Life episode about this.
I mean, yeah, your mom officiated my wedding. So, yes.
Right. Weird stuff does happen. But everything is not equally unlikely. And so I do think there is a spectrum of likeliness that the farther to one end you reach probably doesn't help.
Because mm-hmm.
I was thinking too about When Harry Met Sally, right? Because that's multiple run-ins. And here's what I was thinking about. The coincidence, the final coincidence is them running into each other once Billy Crystal's been divorced finally, right? Yeah. I see someone staring at you in personal growth. They run into each other several times, which I think also makes it less, I think it makes it seem more likely they'll run each other again. I was thinking about this morning.
Yeah.
Even though it's not. Like, it's no more likely because they've run into each other randomly before.
But I mean, it has that Nora Ephron New York vibe. So you feel like they live in the same neighborhood. They go to the same places. It's not
surprising. Yes, but I've lived in New York. And running into someone you know, I lived there for 12 years. And I don't think I ran into someone I know but like once in 12 years, let alone the same person three times.
A lot of people in New York, yeah.
But going back to this one, Billy Crystal acknowledges in the city of 8 million people, I ran into her. Now, again, that's not Meg Ryan. That's Helen, right? His ex-wife. Mm-hmm. So that that coincidence seem apart. And then also you have those interstitial acted coincidence relationships. So the whole movie is basically, I guess, gaslighting you into believing that coincidence, unlikely things are much more likely than they are.
This week on the Book Riot podcast, movies are just gaslighting.
Well, or they're warming you up to the idea. They're making it seem less estranging that some coincidence, unlikely coincidence, by saying, well, this kind of stuff happens. Or on the other hand, my story is about a coincidence. Now that I think is an interesting idea.
Yes.
Is like, I know it's a coincidence, but this coincidence happens and the whole thing is revolving around that. Otherwise, if it comes in the third, I think that's why if it comes in the last third of a book, it feels more heavy-handed because the book already has a reason for existing other than the coincidence.
It feels a lot less earned when it comes late in the book. It feels like It's just
Deus
much
es
more,
machina.
Yeah, it's just much more likely to take me as a reader out of a story. And I think those the two theories that the folks shared with us together really do add up to, like, at least what my response to Martyr was, that it happens late in the book. They don't really acknowledge what a coincidence it is, like how unlikely this thing was to have happened. There's maybe like one line about it, but it is a huge coincidence that should be a very big deal. And that's just a big swing for a debut writer to take. Like, I think also maybe something that's in between the lines of these pieces of advice is that this is something that takes a whole lot of skill with fiction. And it's maybe, you know, that's not like 101 level. You can go for this when you've written a couple other successful novels that do the basics in a really sound way. Just, it felt like a little too big of a swing for me. It took me out of the story. And I've thought about it a lot since then, because the language is really beautiful and he does a lot of great stuff with the book. And I kind of think that it would work better if the whole thing opened with the reveal. If from the very beginning you knew what that thing was, kind of like, you know, The Secret History does this, a whole bunch of other things that we love do this, where like the reveal is done. So the 300 some odd pages are not about figuring out like, oh my gosh, what is this reveal going to be? Instead, you can just unfold how this thing happened. And if he had spent those 300 pages doing a like, how could this have occurred? I think we could have gotten to the same ideas, but in a way that would have felt a lot more smooth to me. I just don't like to see the strings being pulled. And
another theory that I have of synthesizing some of these threads, which I think we're more likely to give leeway to a coincidence that initiates action, tension, or conflict than one that resolves it.
Yeah.
Just because that's the reason d'etre for the whole work is like, look at this strange thing. Look at this, look at this anatomy of a fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're trying
did
to unravel this.
Week?
I did watch it last week. We're trying to figure out what happened and its unlikeliness and mystery. Again, if there was some coincidence that resolved at the end, and I'm trying not to spoil this, it would feel different. But the initiating coincidence is this really strange thing that happened.
Exactly.
So I thought that was worth, and thank you so much to those two writers.
Yeah, thank you,
and
listeners.
I really appreciated that. We got some good stuff.
Good food for thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you have examples of coinky dinks, I guess is the technical term for this.
Yes.
It's been probably 40 years since I used the term coinky dink. Of coincidences that you thought worked well or didn't work, and we could put them through the old ringer here and see if our heuristic for the success rates of coincidences holds at all.
We need like a grand unified theory of this and some kind of rating scale where like on the lowest end, it's something like, and it turns out that they were related the whole time. And the high end is something, you know, highly unlikely that gets pulled off.
Yeah. Especially like examples of the examples of coincidence that violate all of our rules here that somehow we sort of culturally agree, hold up.
We just take them. Yeah.
We just take them. To some degree. So, all right, there's that was my only follow-up. So we're into the news of the week. But updates, I guess this feels like it happened a billion years ago, but I guess it's been a couple of weeks. I linked to it in Today in Books, I believe, or maybe you did. One of us wrote it. Look, Dayquil has done a number on my intermediate-term memory for who wrote what in Today in Books, so I apologize in advance for either making you take credit for something I wrote or horning in on something that you wrote. But Matthew Vaughn confirmed that the writer of Argyle was actually two British mid-list thriller writers in a trench coat. And that's really what it is. And no one cares. And no one saw the movie. Cares. And everyone who is involved in the Argyle project today is probably wishing they weren't. honestly, depending on the reviews and this particular ploy and everything
not
else.
Not good. Yeah. The most interesting thing about this whole book and movie combo was not even that interesting. That's not great for everybody. I know a couple people who have been to see it and the reviews have been universally like, oh my God, no, don't go. And I was like, have I failed you by not telling you about this in advance? How did you end up even going to see this movie?
Right. I think there's still a good chance when this comes to Apple TV Plus that my family will watch it like 9 o'clock on a rainy Sunday morning. You get what you're looking for here. But other than that, I'm not sure.
The only like it was fine review that I've heard was someone who took their two kids to see it, 12-year-olds, and they were like, yeah, this is fine.
There's a cat in a backpack and they're like kicking stuff. There's a certain threshold there that it beats. So I don't think we're going to see any more Argyles happening
here.
I don't know
lesson.
What else is to say. Yeah, I said it. No, I did write this in today's books. I remember. It's like this idea of we're not sure who wrote this or made this thing. I don't think it's ever worked. Like everyone mm-hmm. ends up being Geraldo Rivera in front of an empty basement saying, well, I guess maybe Al Capone once had something in here. This doesn't work. No Good one reference. Cares. It never turns out to be anything interesting. I can't think of one example. It's like the secret author of Thing X was Y. Even one that's a real reveal, like the Galbraith rolling yeah. thing, not
no
that interesting because no one cared
it's
about
not,
the book.
Yeah, it's not that interesting.
I can't. I just don't see it.
Right.
So,
I just,
anyway.
Yeah. I hope publishers learn their lesson from this. And also, like, Swifties, just slow down a little on the Easter egg hunts.
Is there a Lucy and Charlie Brown in football situation with Taylor Swift rumors like this? Do the Swifties, mm-hmm. like, after a while get some exposure therapy? Like, my base case should be now that Taylor Swift is not going to parachute out
I
of a plane
so.
Singing the national anthem.
She's
you know?
Busy.
Yeah, I just, at some point you got to be like, how many times am I going to try to kick this football and land on my ass on TikTok?
I mean, she's got this tour. She's got Travis Kelce. She also has to overturn democracy for the deep state. She does not have time to write a novel.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. So let this be a lesson to us all. It's not Taylor Swift. It's either BTS, someone you've never heard of, or it's also someone you've never heard of.
Yeah, two mid-list authors in a trench coat. Absolutely.
It's very much what it turned out to be here. I think this warranted from me the rare all caps text to you at some non-work hour, which mm-hmm. I try not to do. But it
was worth it.
Was this an appropriate use of texting you outside
yeah,
of work hours
in
all caps?
Yes, okay. Yeah. The bat phone is for announcements like this. Absolutely.
That's right. And I'm not looking at my phone right now, but like, I think Jenna Ortega as the robot could work, I believe, Rebecca. Is that was that the substance of my text?
Oh, I think it was a little more excited than that.
Oh, a little more. Okay, yeah, maybe did I drop up an F-bomb or maybe even used a rare exclamation point?
There was an
exclamation
point.
Wow, I need to write this down. I got to write
exclamation
this down.
Point.
I only get seven per year in text.
You have used it, yeah. For the news that Amy Adams is in talks to star opposite Jenna Ortega in the adaptation of Clara and the Sun. There's no way that Jenna Ortega is anybody but Clara in this.
Would it be wild if Amy Adams was the robot? I guess it's possible.
Oh, that would be wild. My guess is that Jenna Ortega is Clara and Amy Adams is the mom of the teenage girl that Clara is a companion.
Oh, this is an article. It actually does do one of those things of like Clara, parentheses, Ortega, an artificial friend.
Okay.
So it doesn't doesn't come out and say it, but
oh yeah, there it is. And Adams, purchased by a mother Adams. Okay, right. So our guesses were correct and we just didn't read closely enough. But I have a real put it in my veins feeling about this. It's a more straightforward story than like Never Let Me Go is, and the adaptation of that is pretty good. Adapting Ishiguro, quite a challenge, but he is executive producing this. Taika Waititi is involved. He's going to direct. I just put this in my veins. I think I have a high confidence index in this team of people with this story. I wonder where they're going to set it. The book feels like it's set in a like unnamed version of England. There's a lot of countryside.
Near future quasi dystopia countryside. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. My only concern, I mean, Ortega has to this point made stock and trade of being, I guess, really drafting off the Aubrey Plaza stern, emotionless, flippant, and yet lovable and aw shucks kind of automaton to some degree. My only concern is I don't think you could play Clara for laughs. And both Ortega and Plaza, they had this really great appearance together, I think, at the Academy Awards or Oscars or Grammys or something, where they're like kind of riffing that they kind of have the same spot of affectless Latinas to some degree. The fear, and this happens in Wednesday, which my kids love and was a phenomenon, by the way, and I thought Ortega was wonderful in it, is that her flat affect is played as sort of a straight person
like
for other jokes. And then she also jokes about her own deadpanness. And Waititi, again, this speaks to Waititi. Now, again, if this is Ang Lee, I'm not like, this is going to get too broad. But Waititi and Ortega, there's a way of even doing this could be too broad. So I think this could be very cool. But I also think the ceiling actually got higher, but the floor actually got lower to me, if that makes sense.
I think that makes sense. Could turn out. And I did just pull up my phone. There was no exclamation point, so you still have one.
I thought so.
I thought one of my
horcruxes was still out there. I didn't think one of my horcruxes had been destroyed. So no emoji, though.
It was the rare Jeff O'Neill, the whole text was all caps, which like never happens. Yeah. And it said, Jenna Ortega as the robot totally works. It wasn't work. It was like, yes, this totally works. And I just said, OMG. Right now. Yep. Let's do it.
The other two pieces of critical act piece of casting will be the daughter for whom the robot is purchased, and then the mad robot scientist and husband will be the five major characters there. I guess there's another male friend, I think, for the daughter comes into play at some
there
point.
Are some, you know, like sort of interstitial set pieces that it'll be interesting to see what they do with those. Like there's that big construction implement that Clara gets kind of obsessed with, and that works really well in the book.
How are they going to do that first section?
Like, how are they going to do it? Where she's just standing there in the store. Mm-hmm. Voiceover, probably, I would think.
I would think so, yeah. But how much patience will Watiti have for that? I don't have a sense of it.
Right. I hope that Ishiguro can have a tempering effect. This is also making me realize I would watch a reality show about Ishiguro and Taika Waititi working together.
Point. That's a really strong point. I like that a great deal. Did you ever watch Project Greenlight back in the day?
In the early ones, like the first two seasons. Yeah.
The LaBeouf one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shaker Heights, Battle of Shaker Heights. I found that completely enthralling.
It's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Completely enthralling. So for those of you who don't know, this was Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's Bravo series that was basically behind the scenes of making a movie soup to nuts, like screenplay, casting, the whole thing. It was amazing.
It was a competition, right? Like people submitted scripts screenplays,
I believe.
And they picked the winner and then produced it. And it was fascinating.
Fascinating.
I really remember loving it. I think they did some more recent
remake
of, they brought it back. I haven't seen any of those, but I just like inside workplace stuff. Yep. I would love to watch be a fly on the wall in the writer's room. I loved that about especially Studio 30 and its one season. Way back 60. In the day, Studio 60, right? That 30 yes. Rock and Studio 60 came out at the same time.
Not an unsurprising malapropism,
but that kind of vibe. Creative workplaces, shocking that we find that interesting, but give me Ishiguro and Waititi, give me behind the scenes. I'm here for that.
Let's see. It's a lot of, I guess we have a big run of adaptation news. Where do you want to go? So are you going to, you're not a Jane Austen person, but you have this, who's going to watch these Hallmark Channel adaptations? Tell me about how I can square the circle of this.
Okay. So the Hallmark Channel is celebrating the month of Loveuary in February. That is indeed what a room full of people decided to call it.
Think of what they didn't pick.
I know. And they've got four original Hallmark films that are inspired by Jane Austen coming out this month. It's one each Friday. So by the time y'all are listening to this, two or three of them will be out. I think that I am actually the right audience for this. Like, I've watched the first one. The first one is called Paging Mr. Darcy, and it's about an uptight Jane Austen scholar who is going off to an annual Jane Austen convention that is like part academic conference and part fan.
Charlie Kaufman-esque self-referentiality going on here. Okay, I hear this.
Yes.
All right.
So she's going, she's giving the keynote speech, and she needs to impress a fellow Austen scholar who is on the hiring committee for a position at Princeton that she has applied for. She also is falling for a man who works for the convention playing Mr. Darcy while this happens. And she's uptight and he is sort of this carefree actor who's playing this romantic figure. And of course they find each other. Hijinks.
Hideous. And they never talk again. Curtain.
Right. They kiss at the very end. It's a Hallmark movie.
Okay.
So there's that one. There is one that's the one that I think is most interesting is a full just like adaptation straight up of Sense and Sensibility that has a mostly black cast.
Interesting.
So the Hallmark Channel, taking a page from Netflix's book with more diverse casting of a Regency era romance. Netflix did really well with that with Bridgerton. I'm curious about it. And the other two, it doesn't even matter what the other two are. I think that I'm right in the zone for these because I like the occasionally the gentle, ridiculous vibe of a Hallmark movie. And I'm not so invested in Jane Austen because I'm not a fan. I've never read Sense and Sensibility and I don't like Pride and Prejudice. So I'm not so invested that I'm going to care about, like, they got these details wrong or that's not what Wickham would have done or whatever. I can just, I'm there for the vibe. And I think that is what, like, most people who have any kind of familiarity with Jane Austen have. Of course, there's the subset of, like, super diehard Jane Austen fans, and maybe they will watch these, and I don't know what their take is going to be, but my best guess was that Hallmark was like, you know what, people have some affection for Jane Austen and some sense that she wrote romantic things that are significant. Let's have some fun.
And you know what? The story beats are free. This is in the public domain, and people know what it is.
So
why
not? And why not? You know, I was not sad that I spent like an hour and a half of my Saturday last week watching Paging Mr. Darcy. I'm going to watch the next couple. We'll just check in about them here. I mean, it's a Hallmark movie. It's what you think a Hallmark movie is going to be. There's, you know, coincidences. Speaking of, they got some coinky dinks. They have some interrupted almost kisses. There's some bonnets. People wear a lot of bonnets. It's fine. Yep. It's fun. Join me.
One of these should be called Persuasion, and it's about cat breeders. That's one that should definitely happen. Sense and Sensibility, their rival candle makers.
Or perfumiers.
Yeah, and Mr. Wickham could be in it, because he's...
oh, Jeff.
What else could we
do? You got
do?
A lot of this energy of stored up.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been in the basement for a week. I don't know what to say.
Welcome back. We're just glad you're back.
I guess not a dissimilar idea, though coming from a different angle, that Lifetime has signed up Terry McMillan for a quote-unquote slate of new original movies. So Terry McMillan, if you don't know, you should. How Stella Got Her Groove Back, Waiting to Tell being her two big breakout hits.
Big
How
ones.
Stella Got Her Groove Back was a huge bestseller.
Yeah.
Really a phenomenal.
It's great.
A phenomenon of its own kind. Say, why don't you come do movies for us and help us write some of these? And this seems super smart. Get someone who makes the best version of these and can tell stories of black women and black people that who knows what the executive board of Lifetime looks like, but I'm guessing it's, you know, we could maybe guess what it might look like. And sign up for, don't just do one, do a bunch. So I think this is smart. I guess they do overall deals like this with like showrunners, like the Ava DuVernays of the world. And what's the guy that's Ryan Murphy's and those kind of people. No, those are showrunners. They're writers as well. But writing stories and making the shows are related but distinct tasks. And you get the brand a little bit too, right? People who are going to be interested in the Terry McMillan-like story are probably already know the name. I think this is smart. I say give Andy Weir a deal at Sci-Fi. Do all that. Give these master genre writers a deal where they can have a funnel and a pipeline, and they don't have to be making the movies, but outlining stories or maybe evaluating scripts and doing these other kinds of things.
I loved the examples you gave when you wrote about this and today in books. Like you have the Andy Weir idea. I think you said give Gillian Flynn a deal at Peacock. Like, yes. Yeah, I think Hallmark, call up Emily Henry. You know,
I saw that. Well, I guess this was Reese is adapting romantic comedy, so that's Curtis, not Emily.
Sittenfeld,
but it's. Yeah. I mean, come on. We're all in the same vein here. But sign up a bunch of them. Just sign them up. Sign them up. You can even skip the book part if you want. You go right to film. So getting a little closer to the metal, hooking up for a longer series of time. Be interesting to see. I don't know how many. I hope she's getting a big, fat chunk of money for this as well. Interesting woman, Terry McMillan.
Yeah, fascinating.
I was so excited. This is going to be, for those of us who are aficionados of hats in movies,
was not
A Gentleman in Moscow is going to be a feast for the eyes and heart. And facial hair.
Velvet coats,
The coats, hats, and facial hair of A Gentleman in Moscow are going to be whatever costume designer, this is the best thing you could have gotten. If you didn't get Beyonce's world tour, you won A Gentleman in Moscow for costume design.
And now I really want you to grow a mustache.
Well, you're going to be waiting for a while because I want unshaved for 3 weeks, and I can't grow a mustache. I'd have to do some chia seed. I got no shot at it. I can grow the neck beard, which is the least attractive single arrangement of facial hair.
It's not the look. Ewan McGregor does not approve.
No.
This does look great. I'm going to finally get on the Amor Towles train. I'm going to read myself A Gentleman in Moscow so that we can talk about this adaptation. I know. And I am 100% sure that I'm going to be texting you like, Jeff, it turns out that people like things that are good.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, the Gentleman in Moscow, it's the main character, I forget his name. He's a count or something. It doesn't matter. Russian dude.
Alexander Ilyich Rostov.
Yeah, that's what all their names are. I failed my Crime and Punishment character exam a million years ago. Raskolnikov, Razumikin, same person, who cares? Anyway, so the inciting incident here is that this count is basically living in this upscale Moscow hotel. He has got family money, but he doesn't want to go back to the farm or the boonies where he's from. He's got a desk full of gold coins that he sort of lives off of. And then it turns out, if you're living as an aristocracy in Moscow in 1917, things don't always go great for you. And he, I don't think this is giving it away, strikes a deal with the powers that be not to get basically his head cut off or exiled as long as he stays in the hotel. And so the story is him living in the hotel over the next several decades of Russian history and what happens and the relationships he forms. Really, really great stuff. So a wonderful novel. I would make an excellent play. I always thought it would make a great play because it has a few rooms you could set it in. Mm-hmm. But it looks like they're doing the full up. We're getting all the period things in here. Maybe we get someone that wanted to do the production design for Chernobyl. And would you mind backing it up 70 years? And here we go. The hats of the soldiers in this are already ridiculous. They look like the Lollipop Guild from Wizard of Oz. I'm sure it's period correct, but they are so dumb. They're the dumbest nipple felt hats you've ever seen.
It looks like, other than the nipple felt hats, it looks like a real feast for the eyes. And McGregor did grow his own mustache. The Vanity Fair piece opens.
Boy,
with like,
he wakes up with
it.
A full mutton chops if he's not careful, as far as I can tell.
I
didn't even make it all the way down to when and when is this? Is a streamer? Is this on
it is,
TV?
Yeah,
what is
it's
this?
It's coming out March 29th, so not much longer to wait on Paramount Plus.
Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so since we'll I now subscribe to everything, I realized over being sick that we actually subscribe to everything. And I didn't cancel my free trials, and I've got Tubi and Fubi and Boo Boo and Mimi and all the subscription
services. And Michelle's
services, right?
Secret Hallmark Channel knockoff romance.
Did I not tell you what it's called?
You did, but I forgot.
It's friendly.tv, and I think this there's no vowels in friendly, or just an I or just an E or something.
FRNDLI.
It's actually broadcast off a ship in the Balkans. Yeah, in the middle of the Caspian Sea.
Anyway, we'll come back.
Looking
from spring
forward to
week.
That.
Yeah, mid-April, we're going to talk about that on the show here.
Looking forward to that. A Court of Thorns and Roses, the series which was going to be called, and maybe we will be called, The Court of Thorns and Roses. I was trying to edit myself. I was like, wait, which one of these things is it? The book is A Court, but I guess the series was going to be called, or maybe will be called, The Court of Thorns and Roses.
Interesting.
There was a miscommunication about this. I linked to it saying they scrapped this thing, and then Hulu's like, maybe we didn't. I don't know. What is happening here? Why are we getting the story? Was it just a mistake? The original piece was in Hollywood Reporter, which typically doesn't screw up stuff like this. But Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the first correction that I came across was in Vulture, and then the Hollywood Reporter updated their piece. I don't know what happened. I think, Occam's razor is it's the most boring, easily explainable version. It probably was just some weird
miscommunication. Someone flapped their gums and was wrong,
Yeah, or it got lost in translation in some way. But there are no plans to do anything. It says here in the Vulture piece that the rumor died almost as quickly as it started. Vulture confirmed the project is still in development at Hulu. There's no word on any casting news so far, but it's back in the news sphere. And so the Alejandra Gularte at Vulture is like, maybe this will light a fire for Hulu to make some moves. So it's in development. That doesn't mean we're ever going to see it. I especially when it's been in development for 3 years.
I kind of think my theory of the case of when I wrote about this still kind of holds, that there's maybe three things going into this. So I linked to the story when it was dead, and I said, okay, I can see three stories of why this is dead. One is the gold rush for adaptations is finally over. I've been calling it for the last 7 years, so you know, every decade or so I get one of these right. So the money is drying up. The second thing might be, even if you weren't going to, even if the money hadn't dried up, do you want to spend it on a big fantasy? Because this isn't just expensive. This is fantasy is even more expensive. General in Moscow is going to be plenty expensive. Those Apple TV things are plenty expensive.
Yeah.
This is going to be more expensive than, this is going to be House of Dragon expensive.
Right. Yeah. The project was announced in 2021 when we were all still kind of locked in our houses and we had not gone over the hump of peak streaming.
Right.
Yet.
Interest rates were at zero and everyone was watching shit.
And Romantasy was early, and you could still spend $1 billion to make a show for a streamer. Mm-hmm. But those things are not true anymore. And I think the excitement about this is already starting to wane. So if they don't have casting news yet, we're still a couple years away from seeing this thing. Like if they started it today, it would take them at least a year to film it and edit it and do the whole situation. And who knows what the appetite for Sarah J. Maas is going to be by then, but a 5 or 6 year gap between the start of a project that's based on the big TikTok literary phenomenon and the time it actually sees the light of day does not bode well for audiences to still be hungry for it.
Well, and you wonder who's further along, the Fourth Wing, Empyrean Saga, or this? Because it's hard for me to believe there's going to be room for two of these.
Yeah,
they're going to do the thing they want to do with the budget they're going to want to do. And in my civilian life, Fourth Wing has much more brand awareness than the Sarah J. Maas. And some of it is because there's only one series for Yaros. There's only Fourth Wing. We're on the Crescent City Saga 4 or something. I don't even know what the one that just came out is. Like, this is like four series ago. I'm not kidding. Like,
yeah,
it matters,
yeah. And,
right?
And, right. I think Maas has, like, it's a smaller fandom, and they are more into her than the Fourth Wing fans, which there are more of them, and it's a shallower pool so
It's much more like Brandon Sanderson.
Right.
It's more brand. I mean, it's, I think, sells more copies, but it feels Brandon Sanderson shaped. Where Fourth Wing is like, I don't know. It's like it has the awareness of now, right now, of something like Where the Crawdads Sing, plus the fantasy elements.
It's had the where it was this. It's the size of like Crawdads, 50 Shades.
Yeah.
You know, all those, the Colleen Hoover thing, like that's the book, Fourth Wing, that series, those are the books that people who don't usually read for fun are picking those up. And I think Sarah J. Maas has gotten folks who are readers of some ilk, and maybe she's their gateway drug to Romantasy, and they get super into it. She does have a really devoted fandom. But
she does.
If I had to put money on one of those coming out in an adaptation that has something that looks like success, I would be betting on Fourth Wing.
I think I would too. The most recent book, number one, selling 100,000 copies, Bloomsbury had their 2023 financial results came out last week. Yeah. They're up. They call her out. I mean,
they're making ramping things up because of her. Yeah.
Because of her. Yeah. Now we'll see if that goes. All right. Let's do a sponsor break and do a little entertainment diet. All right, why don't you go first? What have you been into and up to and reading?
I read Splinters by Leslie Jameson. Skipped ahead a couple weeks. It's so good.
Yeah, look.
I just want
the 20th,
Leslie
right?
Jameson.
Tuesday, I have it on my account. My new
yes, next
calendar.
Week. I just want her to write about her life forever. This is the memoir about having a baby and getting divorced and then like starting to date. And all of that happens during the pandemic. And it's complicated and messy and so human in exactly the ways that Leslie Jameson is really great at capturing. I read it in like 1.5 big sittings.
Mm-hmm.
And it does the thing that... Or it does a thing that's really hard to do in memoirs, which I think is like, if you are a memoirist who's self-aware and heavily therapized, capturing the like in the moment human messiness of the experience instead of the post-therapy processed version that's like much less interesting. And Jameson captures that. She gets right to like, here's this thing that happened with this guy I was dating, and where it came from for me and how I was feeling in the moment. And then like later on, I talked to a friend and later on, I talked to my therapist and I came to figure out it was blah, blah, blah. But the version of that that works a lot less well is one I've been running into in memoirs where it's like, here's the thing that happened and here's the moment. And I acted from a place of blah, 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 blah.
Here's the Velveeta cheese processed dairy product version of it. Right, I came out like, the other side with, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, first of all, therapy for everyone, anytime they need it. I'm deeply in favor. It's just not helpful or interesting to tell the story fully from that place. Like, memoir does not, it's not as relatable. And it doesn't feel as authentic as when you're like, here's what it was in the moment. This was the mess. Now I also have come to understand it in these following ways. And she does that really beautifully. Mm. Like, you're both in the moment as it occurs and then kind of along the ride with her as she's processing some of those things and as she's making sense of it. It kind of feels like she's thinking out loud with us along. It was really good. Of course it was. I read Attention Span by Gloria Mark, which is about how our attention works. She's a psychologist who does research where like she installs basically keystroke software on your computer and tracks how long you spend on a tab before you move on to another one. And it's horrifying. The average is like 47 seconds.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
It's not good.
Nope. And that it takes like 25 minutes on average for people to come back to the original thing they were doing. So like, no wonder we feel scattered when we try.
That's so worse than I would have thought. I would be prepared for bad, but that's very bad, Rebecca.
It's very bad, Jeff. It's very bad.
If you look at two things an hour, you're cooked. You are basically you're basically the Christmas ham. Oh man, that's terrible.
And it is terrible. And she also has good frameworks for how you can try to address this in some ways in your life that she's not promising magic, but it's stuff like, don't take your breaks from your computer work. Like if you're a knowledge worker, don't take your computer break by like picking up TikTok or something that is designed
and
to
that's
suck
it,
you
ever.
In.
Just don't ever pick up.
Just don't ever
pick up TikTok.
If you don't know how algorithms work, she explains them in the book, and the stuff about TikTok made me feel very affirmed and like
don't,
I'm never
do you
getting
feel
on the
like,
clock
I had this thought the other day. This reminds me of it. When I'm in my quarantine, I'm like the Count of Monte Cristo down there just thinking stuff.
Just thinking about stuff.
Someday I'm going to be free. And I'm going to unleash these takes on the world. I feel like someday we're going to get the RJR Reynolds memo that Facebook or TikTok, they did a study about how bad this crap is for you, and they bury it, and there's going to be hearings, right? There's going to be some version of Michael Mann's Insider about these social media companies, how they've engineered it within an inch of our lives to get us
we're
into these things.
Already, I think, on the early days of that, where we're finally recognizing how bad it is for kids and folks are getting dragged into Congress to
But wait a minute,
themselves.
I'm not that different than a kid.
Right. And so she's like, okay, so think about the mode that your break, like the form of the break that you're taking so that it actually gives your attention a rest and then you can come back to the thing that you're paying attention to and feel fresh. So you don't want to TikTok because that'll suck you in longer. You don't want to go read news on your break because that is very likely to leave some kind of residue is the word she uses where you're still thinking about it.
News
when you come
residue?
Back.
That's gross. I mean, that's
it sounds,
disgusting.
I mean, it's as
no,
bad
who wants
as it
a part
sounds.
Of that. That's, it right. feels so right. It's not,
she's
it's
like,
not undescriptive of what happens when you've been
right. She doesn't news. Say exactly what you should do, but she gives you like the flavor of the thing that you should try to do. So like the thing I've been trying, because Bob and I are going through a jigsaw puzzle phase this winter in our house, is if I'm like, I got 5 minutes in between calls and I don't want to be bouncing between tabs, I tell my little, sentient puck that lives in my living room to set a timer for 5 minutes. And then I go just like noodle on a jigsaw puzzle for 5 minutes. And it does, like, it gives me, it's rote attention, pay rote attention to something where like it's engaging, but you don't have to work hard. And there's, she also recommends like the two dots game on your phone for something like that. I found it really useful, equal parts useful and horrifying. I wrote about it in depth for Better Living in Books, Better Living Through Books. So if you want to like really go deep, you can check that out at the Substack. Just listen to Get the Picture by Bianca Bosker on Audio.
And?
Are you not there? It's good. It's really good. Yeah. I loved We both loved Cork Dork, where she like dives into the world of wine and becomes a sommelier. And this is about trying to get into the world of fine art, which is equally, if not more, suspicious of an outsider who's trying to get in.
Right. Because you and I can go have a glass of nice wine. You know, we could throw down $40 for a glass of wine at a restaurant. We cannot go buy a small Rembrandt or something, even if we were trying to dabble.
And so she like gets a job as a gallery assistant at a small gallery in New York and learns to speak the lingo and then sort of like becomes friends with different artists and goes on studio visits. And it's like a 5-year project that she goes on. I, as a person who likes art but doesn't really know much about it, it's kind of the same relationship I have to wine of like, I know what I enjoy, but I couldn't really tell you why. I felt like I learned a lot and it also demystified that world. A lot of it is, you know, like the emperor has no clothes. She does a nice job there. It was fun. It was a good listen. And then A Love Song for Ricky Wilde by Tia Williams. I read
which you wrote about a little bit.
That was the one that I was like, I need somebody to talk to me about this who's already read it. I loved the vibe. It's set in Harlem. It moves between 2023 and the early 1920s during the Harlem Renaissance. You get like great jazz stuff. It has a real ambiance. The characters are funny and punny. Like there are some O'Neill level puns. The main character is a florist and her Instagram account is called Botany Flowers Lately.
Oh, that's very good. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Right? Yeah. There's stuff like that. There were some supernatural elements I wasn't expecting and that just aren't really my jam, but I really enjoyed the writing. So like, I'm not sad that I read it, but it wasn't a home run for me. So fair those enough. Are mine. Yeah. Tell me about your 23 movies.
Movies. I'm trying to think of how to make this interesting in any kind of way to anyone that's not me. Let me start here because both you and I love the book Leave the World Behind. And I don't know that you... Did you watch
the I have not
film?
Watched it. Mm-mm.
I did watch it. Would you like to hear my thoughts? Or are you in a way... Are you going
I
to watch
I want to
watch
hear
it,
your you thoughts. No, the reviews were so mixed that I was like, I'm not in a hurry. Maybe I'll get to it someday.
I don't know if I would have liked it better if I had not read the book. I think the book... The film did not trust the material enough. It added stuff. It added more spectacular kinds of things, and they'll be plainly... You will not have to go remind yourself if something did or didn't happen in the book.
Okay.
If you think it didn't, it did not happen in the book.
All right, good.
And some
know.
Of that is to make it feel more cinematic, I guess, because there's like big, weirder stuff that happens, and what if a bunch of Teslas run over each other in the highway? And it didn't trust what I thought was the great achievement Alam had in Leave the World Behind of... not doing too much, not saying too much, not explaining too much. The style is very spare and very withdrawn. Sam Ismail, the director, like he does these overhead camera shots and moving around, and there's a lot of like really obvious creepy stuff is happening, music. And I thought one of the pleasures of Leave the World Behind, insofar as you can call it a pleasure, is the creeping normalcy of this abnormal thing happening.
I agree.
And I think that was the thing, is that you could imagine, like, I probably would react a lot like this, or at least within the one or two standard deviations, it would probably feel a lot like this. And I can imagine if it did happen, that there was some unnamed global event, and I was in an Airbnb in Montauk, this could be how it feels.
I thought he did that really well.
It did that very well. And Leave the World Behind... just exaggerates so much, not exaggerates, just highlights, stylizes, puts a hat on a hat and a button on a button every single time it was available. And there's a couple of minutes where Ismail doesn't do that work really great, where Mahershala and Julia Roberts are just dancing to a vinyl record downstairs.
Nice.
And there's the camera steady and it's just them doing a thing in the weirdness. There's a scene, if you've read the book, you know that Kevin Bacon plays a contractor friend slash friend of, as we find out, less of a friend than the husband thinks. That's just them talking weirdly about a weird situation, the way that probably 45-year-old dudes of different not economic classes, but different political classes would actually talk about something like this. But every time Ismail felt like had a chance to try to be Hitchcock, it felt like he tried to be Hitchcock or wanted to be Hitchcock and didn't want to get out of the way of the material. And that's what I really wanted it to do, because I don't think it needed much seasoning. The ingredients were good.
Yeah,
we didn't
they
need
were.
That much seasoning.
Okay.
So, anyway, I think it's still worth watching, if only to see how much it diverged or different choices you can make. Like, there's a cut of it I think that's probably a lot better, to be perfectly honest with you. I caught up on some stuff that I know Michelle would never want to watch. This okay. is like me on a plane, right?
Yep. I know.
I don't even really like horror, but I knew that Get Out is like one of my cultural blind spots, so I watched Get Out and Nope one night back to back.
Oh, that's a big swing.
Yeah, it was back fine. I mean, it's okay. fine. And one thing, Get Out again, it's awesome, and I won't say anything more about it. But I watched it close enough behind Leave the World Behind. It's like, oh, this, because that's a very strange. But it's played very straight. Mm-hmm. There's not much flourish.
It's played very
unflourished.
Yeah, what an interesting just moment to have two pieces of media back to back, because Get Out does have that like slowly creeping horror that's not overdone and it's like pitch perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe if I hadn't seen Get Out right after, I wouldn't have. There was something rubbing me the wrong way about Leave the World Behind, and it was clarified, or at least articulated to some degree to see Get Out. What's weird is I didn't love. I liked Get Out. I'm not a horror fan, but I certainly appreciate that. I was meh on The Holdovers. I don't know why. I'd never seen Everything Everywhere All at Once. I was like, that's okay. I like that. I've seen. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've seen the source material that it's drawing from as much as anything with that. I guess one, and I knew I was going to like it. It's Mank, David Fincher's.
Oh, yeah.
Adaptation of his dad's screenplay about Henry Mankiewicz, who wrote the screenplay to Citizen Kane. True story, starring Gary Oldman. I mean, it ticks all of my boxes. All the literary dads out there, you know who you are if you haven't seen Mank. I need to text my own dad to say, Dad, have you seen Mank? That's how much of a dad movie it was. I need to engage the father signal. Catching on some stuff I never saw. Power of the Dog. Turns out that was really good.
Yep.
It was good. Saw Knives Out 2, also very good.
Mm-hmm.
Rebel
mm-hmm.
Moon, which I heard was bad, but I wanted to watch, was very bad.
Love this for you.
Yeah. The Pigeon Tunnel, which is the Apple TV Plus documentary about Jean Le Carré.
Yeah.
Pretty weird. Again, pretty not trusting weird. The interviews. Let's do Ken Burns. We don't need all these weird cuts. How many times do I need to see your B-roll of a pigeon actually flying out of a tunnel? I get it. Like, it's a metaphor. Leave me alone already. I'm not an idiot.
The reenactments did not work for me in the pigeon
tunnel.
Doesn't
work.
Just give me Jean Le Carré talking for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
And it's fine. His stories are good. What I really want, I guess, is just a documentary about his dad, like, or a novel about his, like Ronnie, the Swindler. Amazing stuff. I'm glad I watched it, but it could kind of keep it on there.
Did you watch Robert Downey Jr.'s documentary about his dad?
I did. I thought that was better. I thought that was better.
That's kind of, I mean, Le Carré obviously can't
It
do
helps when your dad's
thing.
Alive, yeah.
Right, because his dad's no longer alive. But something in that vein is also, that's what I wanted the Pigeon Tunnel to be.
Yeah. Let's see. We had a few nights we did rewatches where we put on, my family was upstairs on FaceTime. We watched Notting Hill together. We watched The Marvels together. Always a nice time. I'm thinking of Ending Things, Charlie Kaufman's adaptation of a book that came out several years ago. Pretty weird, Rebecca. I know, I'm ready for some weird Charlie Kaufman. It was, I think, even weirder than I was expecting. Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley. David Thewlis. And then Toni Collette in a chamber piece that I can't even describe it for you. Very weird crap. I caught up on the one Wes Anderson I had not seen, The French Dispatch. I watched that.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fun
The
one.
The first vignette is excellent. The second two were rococo nightmares of preciousness.
And no Anatomy hard feelings. Of a Fall.
Anatomy of a Fall, No Hard Feelings, the Jennifer Lawrence comedy vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
Had a fun time.
Yeah, it's a good one.
That was fun.
It's fine.
Friend Marvel. I watched Licorice Pizza, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie that came out a couple years ago.
I
fine.
That on a plane.
Again, I was like, you know, I feel like I've seen versions of this. I don't know. It was good. But
I like Paul Thomas Anderson, but I felt like I did not understand the big deal around Licorice Pizza.
No. I mean, it's a very good version of what it is, but what it is is a 15-year-old and a 29-year-old who kind of like each other and some other stuff happens. I don't know. I'm okay. That's pretty much it, I think, that I did. So I don't know. Theater Camp. I guess that's one I picked up.
Oh, yeah. Theater Camp was fun. I did.
That was fun. Yeah. I started out my first four where I'm just watching stuff to pass the time. So it was No Hard Feelings, Rebel Moon, Theater Camp, and Knives Out 2. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go catch up on some stuff that I probably won't see unless it's me in a room by myself ever again. So then I went Anatomy of a Fall, Power of a Dog, Mank, Licorice Pizza, The Pigeon Tunnel.
Anatomy of a Fall, I think, is the movie I saw in the last year that I was most surprised was not an adaptation of a literary work. Like, it just it feels like a book.
Easily could be. Did you like it?
I did. I liked it. I loved all the courtroom scenes. Like, I remember coming home from the movies and telling Bob, like, I just had no idea how different French courts are from
our
courts.
You could just say stuff, Rebecca Shinsky.
You can just talk. You just talk.
Yeah, off the bench. The peanut guy was like, wait a minute, what about this? Like, okay, that's fine, I guess. You have a different colored robe on, but whatever.
Right, yeah, that was fascinating. I was like, whoa. I like all the ambiguity around it. I loved how much it upset some people that it was left unanswered. It kind of felt to me like the response.
I did wonder about that. I'm immune to that kind of stuff. I think you are as well, as literary fiction fans.
Right? I like that. I'm like, yeah, trust me to think about it on
my own.
Wasn't
that the point? Wasn't that sort of the point of the whole thing?
Anyway. Yeah. And also that instrumental version of 50 Cent P.I.M.P. that plays like a key role. It's really
what a
good
dog
stuff.
Performance. What a dog performance. You got worried there in the middle for the dog.
I did. I did get worried for the dog. And I had a like, oh no, that the dog is okay.
The dog is okay.
That was, that was an enjoyable one. I'm thinking now about like, what would I watch in a week of isolation? And it would probably be a similar arc of like, you start with potato chips and then you get to some like, okay, I need some substance.
Yeah, I also had on my docket, I was going to try to get to May, December. I can't bring myself to press play on that one for some reason.
I would be really interested in your take on May, December. I wasn't as hot on it as everybody else was. I thought it was interesting, but like, I wouldn't give it a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, there's a couple. I still haven't seen Oppenheimer because I want to watch on the big TV, but I'm not sure who's going to watch it with me. And it's like 9 hours long, so... I'll probably watch that when I get COVID again next year or thereafter.
You know, they have brought it back to a bunch of theaters along with some of the other Oscar nominees.
They're playing on 70mm here in Portland, but I'm not going to
It's worth, it is worth seeing
I would like
on big
to see.
Screen.
Yep. All right. And you know, the most painful part was I had 4 episodes of Masters of Air just sitting there for me, but I got to watch out with my family. So
We are through the first 3 here, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Sometimes what you order is what you want. Well, thanks so much for everyone listening. Shoot us an email, podcast@bookriot.com, especially looking for coincidences of various degrees of success, full-edged execution. Show notes, bookriot.com/listen. There's Today in Books, there's the Patreon, there's Better Living Through Books. I'm sure there's something I'm forgetting, but there'll be links to all those things in the show notes that in the podcatcher right now or at the show. Rebecca, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, glad you're back.